Rocco, and I'm interviewing Mr. Floyd Jessmore, who worked at what plant was that?
Chevrolet Gray Iron Foundry.
Chevrolet Gray Iron Foundry for 44 years, and was affiliated with the UAW union for 37 years. Mr. Jessmore, can you give me some idea what the plant was like before the union came in and after the?
Well, the plant, speaking before the union came in, working conditions were terrible. We had nothing like a break or a coffee break, anything like that. That was out per se, and we worked 12 hours a night from 5 o'clock to 5:30 in the morning. I was working nights at the time, and the day shift would come in and take your machine off. We had what was called a piecework system. Now, I was making coke. I made 374 an hour. The rate was 374 a hundred. That was three cents and 74 hundredths a piece. Now, at that time, day rate was 45 cents an hour, and if a man could make, say, 70, 75 cents an hour, he was doing good. Because the fact that if you made over that amount, the rate setter was down and set a new rate on the job, and you just had to make that many more cores. This was prevalent throughout the whole foundry, even on molding and in the cleaning room, any place where they had a rate set on the job, piecework rate. Why, they had the men by the tail because he could only make so much money. If he made over that, why, they just raised the rate of production and the rate of the job, and you had to work that much more for the same amount of money that you had before. They were very hard on you, and insofar as smoking, they'd catch you if they caught you smoking. Why, it was sometime a penalty of discharge. You see, they had no progressive penalty in them days. They were all one penalty, discharge, you're fired. If you don't do what they say, you're fired. Because at that time, there were thousands of men sitting out in the front gate, standing out along the fence all day long. So they had no trouble getting labor in them days. They had no trouble at all. It was all they had to do was walk out and pick their man, come in here and take your place. Like I say, smoking was out. The only time you'd have a chance to smoke was when you went to the bathroom, and they were pretty rough on you when they caught you. There's a lot of men. If he's a good corn maker, they want to keep him while they lay him off for a couple of weeks or a week and bring him back. They penalize him. But if he's somebody that they didn't particularly like, why, he'd be off the plant. He's fired. In them years back there, I was fired about six or seven times on various little chicken stuff. And I tell you how bad it was, that some of the men would go around and collect up money for a former's birthday or for a Christmas present and so forth. Now, myself, I was raising a family at that time, and I couldn't afford to give these presents to the foreman. And a fellow would come around and say, here, how much are you going to give towards shut that quick. I had a little interruption there, but we get back to the interview in regards to working conditions at the Chevrolet Gray Iron Foundry. I was telling you about the fellows that come around and take up collection. They come to me and I tell them, I can't give you anything. Everything I got to go to the children. Well, they put my name down and then they put off the back of it. It wasn't only me, there was other fellows that do the same thing. And then when they presented the foreman with his present, they'd show a list of people and you had aught. Now, I tell you what that meant. In terms of money, you'd find out later on when there was a little bit of overtime or if there's an extra day to have, you'd never get it. They would punish, you would punish a man for, being a little bit tight with money. Well, myself, I had five children to raise, and I couldn't afford. But I got in this year trouble quite often. Now, these were the conditions that we had before we got a union in. Now, like myself, I was on nights. I was on nights for about 16 years. I couldn't get on days. They just wouldn't let me. I'd ask to go on days. Oh, you're doing all right. Just stay where you are. Stay where you are. Even though younger fellas would be hired in, friends of foremans or relations of foremans, they'd put them on. Now, I got off in core making, and I went on to truck driving. And I found the same thing prevailed in truck driving. That is, the foreman's brother would, if it was an easier job to get, he would have the job. And we took what was left. There was times, this is what hurt us very much in the core room and the foundry. You'd come to work and you would have to line up against the ovens, and the foreman would come and pick his men for the production he had to make. So he figures out how many cores he'd get out of each man, and he'd have a production sheet, so he'd pick his men out for any particular job. You go on this job, you go on that job. Now, when he got enough men to carry out his production, if there's any men left, he'd tell them, you stand against the wall, and I'll take care of you. Well, it might be an hour, it might be 2 hours, you stand against the wall, and he'd come, I haven't got a job for you going home. You didn't get paid for that. That was out. This happened each morning, and it got to a point where you had to make points with a foreman in order to be called in the morning. It was worse than it was really worse than the longshoreman's way of hiring haul and stuff like that. I've lost many a day because the foreman didn't like me. Now, these are the things we had to fight. These are the things that's laid in our crop. And the first indication that there was organized down at Flint. A group of us got together and organized here in Saginaw, but we had to hide our buttons. We had to hide the fact that we belonged to unions, because it was a no-no not to belong to the union. You better not.
What would happen, say, if they found out that you were thinking about joining or did not?
I'll tell you about that. One night, this is interesting thing. One night when I come out of work, they took me to a side and they said they wanted me over in a car. I went across in the parking lot, and they put me in a car with about five or six fellas. So I asked the fella next to me, where are we going? Said, well, we're going over on the west side, over on Hamilton Street, and break up a union meeting. Now, that's where I was headed for when I was going out, see?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't know I'd gone to the union.
Mm-hmm.
And the, Joe Wheeler, another fella, him and I had belonged, so I joined the union, went down to Flint and joined the union together. And he was there too. Well, we went over there, and all the cars lined up about a block from there. And the general foremen and foremen got out and walked up there, and they heard that there was some shotguns in the hall. Of course, there was. We knew that. It was mm-hmm. Kenny Forbes and John Davis and a bunch of them fellas that was over there from the Malibu. See, this was a conglomeration from all over. The foundry men, the transmission, the steering gear, and the Malibu iron. It was all in the one group. You didn't have enough to really have a hall of their own. But these fellas got scared out and they went. So one day I was on my truck, and somebody wheeled and said I was in the union, and I was trying to organize the rest of the people there. I get them one at a time, fellas that I knew that were safe. But he got back to me, and they just come up and back me and led me out the place, threw me out the gate. So we don't need you. All they did that was Charlie Bagnell. They did it with various fellas that were active in the UAW.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't last. All they did that for was to scare us, and they figured they'd scare the rest of the groups. But in fact, after we got moving and got organized quite a bit, we went into management and had three demands. We wanted recognition, we wanted the abolishing of a peace work system, and the abolishing of payday every 15 days. We wanted it every week. And they flatly refused it. And they said, the manager said right then, said that you can go what you want. We know you only got 250 men. You can't do nothing with the flat. You can't put it down. So you go ahead and do it. Well, his information was way wrong, because that night we had 1,800 members in the local 461. We called it 461 then. We organized into a union. We hired the Bohemia Hall for a meeting. And we got underway and struck the plant. And I just forget how many days we was. I think it was 40-some days. Anyways.
Was there any violence at all while it was being struck?
Very much so. A lot of violence then. Oh, yeah. A lot of beating up. And both sides got it. But eventually, we became the dominating more or less, and we had more, as we progressed more, our side was
more strength.
Yeah, and so we did a good job organizing that plant. We had a lot of fellows that were very much against it, because they hadn't seen anything that would give them any gain for what they was taking a chance, and they hadn't seen any of this years. Well, we did one. We abolished the peace work and went into a straight day rate. And then they paid us every week, and they recognized us at a union. Mm-hmm. And then we met on a weekly basis with management and iron out our various arguments. Now, we did use, at times we did use strong arm methods, but not any more than they did before we got in this position. The company built great big mammoth looking things out of their trucks, plated and all that their stuff to impress us. And they came along and they got all the prize fighters. They had Butch Otto, they had Pat Crawford and Simmons brothers, and they got them as a nucleus to start vigilantes, and they had every big man they could get, and before they could get, we could get a hold of them, and they trained them up on the cafeteria roof. A man by the name of Jerry Coon was the man that was doing all the training, and what they were trying to do was to impress the other fellows and kind of pull back the weaklings in that. But we never did have a confrontation with that group at all, because I don't think that management could trust them. And I'll say it this way. Eventually, when we had a better, stronger organization, Pat Crawford was one of our best union men, our most active and most radical. So was Fritz Hines, and all these here the fighters came over into the union because they got some dirty deals once they and they thought, well, they'd get back in the company, come with us. So eventually, we had all these fellas, and invariably these men that who were on the company side, and a lot of them who were very vicious against the union, became some of our best men as far as union people. Then, some of them were better than some of the fellows first got into the union, see? Mm-hmm. They became militant, and they became radical. Well, they said, Pat Crawford, he was radical. He beat the hell out of a couple guys. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. So, after a while, after we got organized in good shape, we had the second contract at the International. Got after a long strike, well, we got better working conditions, and we got better better relation between management and the union. See, the management then realized it was here to stay, mm-hmm. and they started doing business with us. But the only we were progressing wonderful. We had a good organization. We had a lot of things going our way. We had instituted a lot of arrest periods for some of the hard workers. We even got 50% relief for some of the heavy jobs. And these were fringe benefits, and going along good until Homer Martin. Homer Martin, he got into a convention fight with Walter Ruther and Ed Hall. This is Ed Hall and Wyndham Mortimer. And Wyndham Mortimer and Ed Hall were very much leaned towards communism. They even admitted it and all that. So Homer Martin at that time, he wanted to lick the communists in that convention. And he fought Wyndham Mortimer and Ed Hall and those fellas that leaned that way, to a point that he broke with him. And John L. Lewis at that time told Homer Martin that he better come into the convention. Martin wanted to break away and not go into the CIO convention. Well, Martin, he said, take your file and go into the CIO convention, UAW CIO convention, and lick him in there, see? What should have been was the best thing he should have done. What Martin should have held. But when he came over here, he had a lot of group, he had a big following, he was a good speaker. He was able to take quite a few people with him, split the union right down the center. And then we lost all bargaining power for a long time. And we lost a lot of prestige, we lost a lot of members who got disillusioned. Mm-hmm. But until such time that...
What year is this now?
This was going into 39. Mm-hmm. Out until such time as the Labor Board came in, forced them in to a labor board election of all the employees, and the CIO faction won out. The AFL took this splinter group, and they called it UAW AFL. The only plant that they did keep was the Wilcox Ridge. But at that time, right at that time, I was president of the local 461. Now I was the one that I was with the group Charlie Bagnell. We broke away from these fellas, because in this year group that stuck here was an awful lot of communists. I mean, they admitted that we're communists.
Mm-hmm.
So we broke away from them. The election, I got all these here men together, and I told them, I said, now, they won. There's no use of us even continuing on because there's a local union. It's just dispersed the local union. What had give to the CIO group, because they had started up with nothing. We had all the money and all the all this stuff, and the majority of them went along with me, and we passed it, and we called the CIO up. I told them, come on, get the stuff, and we went into the CIO just as if we'd never been away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then on we started to go leaps and bounds, but going in good shape, and the war broke out. And that hurt us. It hurt us because it took an awful lot of the militant people away from us.
Mm-hmm.
When in young, they went into the army. Well, during that time, they became a lot of factional fights. You know, a lot of, some people would call them Ruthers, some people would call them R.J. Thomas, and some people would go with Wyndham Mortimer and Ed Hall. They were still in Mr., but in minor roles at the time.
Mm-hmm. See?
So that we were hurt then until after the war. Then the men come back, all the young fellows come back, and we picked up in very good shape. And then we started to clean house and put our house in order. They got rid of Mortimer, they got rid of Hall, and they got rid of all of the fellows that were, well, I don't know how to say it, but they were a detriment to the union. And that's when Walter Ruther went into his convention, became president, and then he swept big place came of these people who are, whether they were communists or not, but they were troublemakers. He got rid of all of them. And then we started to go by leaps and bounds to getting all these here fringe benefits that was a lot more than we found out that the dime an hour raise wasn't worth a goddamn because it's going to be in the we found out that every time we got a dime raise, when they raised the grocer's and that. So I can see that a lot of fellas, I went to conventions and we more or less believed in the fringe benefits because we derived more out of the fringe benefits than out of the 10-cent raise. That's when we got the paid holidays and we got the relief time. Relief time means a hell of a lot when you're working in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the vacations with pay and sick pay and all these here things which meant a hell of a lot to us. Then we started working on the pension plan and progressively we got the pension plan up where my way of thinking is just tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
It's just tremendous. Now, I say that in this respect, I retired when I was 72. I was retired when I was 62 in 1970, and my full retirement was $457 a month. That will go until I'm 65, and I'll lose some money, and I'll go down to my basic pension of, it'll be, my basic pension is so much a month for each year, that 44 years give me about $250-some a month. That's when I get 65. And then my Social Security is 205, and my Social Security is 102. See, what did I say? 105 is two. My Social Security is 205. Hers is 105. Half what I get.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say this. I'm also right now. I'm with the Social Service. And I have to go up to the office once or twice a week for people to come in there and counsel here. I'm a counselor, that's what I am. And a man came in from one of these here small shops in the plant, in the Saginaw, and we were talking about retirement. He said he had 35 years in there, and in this here one particular plant. It was a Mr. Murrow, no, not A.T. Farrell. And I said, well, what was your pension? It's $85 a month. He got $85 a month, but they never was organized. See, there's a comparison between organization and not organized. Well, just $85 a month is starvation wage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mine, when I come out, like I say, it's $457.80. You can't beat that, see?
Mm-hmm.
And it was done for through continued effort on the UAW's part to better the working man, and he did. Now, I'm getting something beyond that some of the fellows don't have. Of course, there's quite a few in my days. This is a drug program here where I get drugs. Today, I'm a diabetic. I'm a diabetic, and I do have a heart condition created by diabetes. And I have to take medicine. Now, if I had to buy all the medicine that I have to take, it would cost me around $90 a month just for medication for myself. Now, I'm not talking to my wife out here, who's also a diabetic. She's obese, and she has a heart condition. She had one heart attack. Now, she takes medicine comparable to mine. You see what I'm getting a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to pay. Now I only pay now 99 cents for a prescription.
Yeah.
Now she says she had some trouble with her hands, and she had to have a salve and a little tube like that cost $18. If I had to pay $18 for them tubes, and she's had she's had about a dozen. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
These are the benefits that we say is bread and butter. Well, you know, I mean, you can are tangible, something you can see, something's there. See? And these are the benefits that we talk about that organized labor has brought to us. You know, you wipe out organized labor today and you wouldn't have management wouldn't come out and say, you know, as good as it is, we're going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to organize. And I tried to talk. He's showing how before we was organized, before we organized, what we had, the conditions we had to have to work under. Before the union came in there, the company was penalizing you by taking money away from us. In this way, Pete worked. You wasn't sure that their three cents and 7,400 for each score you put on, because if you, didn't need to go along with what they want, or if you did something wrong, they take 7,400 away from you. I mean, it's what happened. Then I've worked on a particular core, and I have a rack full of my cores. Now I'm counting them. Each one is that dollar cents to me. When I look at this, each one is dollar and penny, Steve. And down the dry end of the foundry, they find they had a surplus of these here cores. They had too many, Steve. Or rather have them laying around, take them down and break a whole rack, see? You don't get nothing. See? And you can imagine a spark flying off my neck when somebody come down and break a whole rack of cores at just 3 and 4 cents a piece, see?
Yeah.
But they did it to keep the cores down. They didn't want to store them away, so they busted them down here. They didn't have to pay for that, see?
What about the federal government? Did they ever intervene like they do, you know, with the postal workers and when you struck?
They might have put something, but the federal government never stepped into it. They never stepped in that I know of, and I've been active. I've been a committee man, and I've been a top negotiator and all that, and I've never seen anything where the government would come in. Now, I tell you, the union was opposed to these government arbitrators, and the company was too.
Mm-hmm.
The company.